In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
We walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. Many now realize that the reasons to justify an unprecedented worldwide economic shutdown aren't logically sound. The trillion-dollar economic bailout scheme, the call for mandatory vaccines, the quick and quiet installation of fifth-generation millimeter wave infrastructure and subsequent surveillance mechanisms, the remote learning programs for young people, are some of the long-term UN Agenda 21 goals being accomplished right now as a compliant and frustrated populace is strung along with conflicting information and lies. However, citizen journalists continue to question the stories and news reports of the First Net Media. One way to shore up cracks in the propaganda machine is to post heart-wrenching viral videos from medical staff who, for example, claim black patients are being deliberately killed in New York City hospitals. We talk about the integrity of these videos, the fear-mongering, and social engineering tactics with returning guest Jason Goodman. Jason Goodman is a former Hollywood 3D cinematographer who runs the YouTube channel Crowdsource the Truth, and he's recently highlighted inconsistent reports by the corporate-owned media from the streets of New York City. Jason, welcome back to another news.
Thanks for having me back, Jeff. I'm really pleased to be here.
You were on the show a few weeks ago talking about your on-the-ground reporting here in New York City and visiting hospitals that were depicted on TV news as overwhelmed with COVID-19 patients. However, when visiting those same hospitals, there were no lines of people, ambulances were parked, it was abnormally quiet, and very few staff were willing to talk with you. We're going to talk about the potential social engineering of videos that look as if they're made on cell phones by nurses and other medical professionals.
Yeah.
In doing so, we're not questioning the many brave doctors and nurses who are working to save lives during this time, but we are questioning nearly everything else surrounding this pandemic. There was a recent video posted online from a nurse named Nicole Siritek from Elko, Nevada. Her story is basically she decided to travel to New York to help patients, the state known to be worst hit by COVID-19 in the U.S. Siritek had worked in two New York hospitals and observed the way COVID-19 patients were treated. It was about a 25-minute video, and it goes into detail about how untrained personnel are contributing to the sometimes intentional deaths of COVID-19 patients. Jason, if this is social engineering, it's a good one. She swears a lot, she's crying, and not only talks about how patients are being killed, but primarily those who are black. What makes you suspect this video isn't authentic?
Well, I mean, we should, full disclosure, you and I had a little email exchange over this, so you have some insight into my thoughts on this video, but I'm glad you're bringing it up. So for people who haven't seen the video, we have this woman, Nicole Siritek, who, as you've said, makes these claims. She outright says that people are being murdered. She uses that language. That's a very specific accusation of a crime. And unless she has direct evidence of the type that you would bring to the police when bringing a charge, that is defamation per se. She's accusing the hospital, at least. And it's not just personnel. She's talking about doctors. So this is a nurse who is accusing doctors in some unnamed hospital of murder. This is so serious. First of all, she's not doing it with her face hidden. She's not doing it with her voice disguised. She claims that she's trying to get this word out, yet there's no way to contact her, provided in the video. She says she's tried to contact the news, etc. No one wants to hear her, so she's taking this extreme measure.
And black advocate groups as well.
Right, but yet she refers to her patient as my black guy. That doesn't really seem like the type of language an open-minded person would use. I don't think you should refer to a patient as my black guy. And she says that twice. I'm not black, but I was kind of offended by that. If she said my Jew got taken away from me, I'd be like, what the hell is this lady talking about? You know, I mean, it seemed incongruent to me. And you mentioned her use of foul language. which also seemed incongruent with a medical professional who's trying to get a message out in a serious way.
It struck me later as a way to pretend to be authentic.
Intensity, yeah. Well, that argument could be made, which is why I'm not outright accusing this woman. I'm just pointing out the things here that seem incongruent that lead me to believe that she's a social engineer. And if she hears this, she can contact me on truth@crowdsourcethetruth.org. I've made a very focused effort to try to reach this woman, and I'm pretty good at getting people on the phone usually. People who watch Crowdsource the Truth are aware of that, and I've been unable to contact her or any of her relatives. I did get an active phone number for one of her relatives. I'm not going to say who, but it seems like a direct family member who I have called many times and has not answered the phone. I've gotten the voicemail.
What about email or Twitter?
I don't have an email address for her. I haven't been able. Do you have a Twitter contact for her? I mean, why doesn't she give her email there if she's trying to get the word out?
I thought about that as well. And
why would the hospital not immediately fire her for doing that? It's just such an ill-conceived plan if what she's actually trying to do is help people. Because the other thing that I look at is, and I brought this up in my investigation of this movie, Out of Shadows, okay? Yeah, it's primarily focused on the CIA's involvement with Hollywood and how sexual abuse and entrapment are used to manipulate people and control people who have influence and, you know, basically CIA infiltration of Hollywood. So I know some of the people who were involved in that. And when certain things having to do with the YouTube analytics seemed strange to me and I just made some innocent inquiries, the responses were really unusual when I compared them to my normal interactions with those people. And it just caused me to inquire further. And I mean, what I'm talking about, Jeff, is math, not my personal opinion of what should or shouldn't be, because that doesn't really have that much value. When I compare the viewership of a trailer for that movie, a 40-second video of self-admitted ex-CIA officer Kevin Shipp, a 40-second trailer of Kevin Shipp on a channel with 30,000 viewers receives 100,000 views in 2 days, that's remarkable performance when I compare it to almost any other video on YouTube, including videos with Kevin Shipp in them. But even more remarkable is this statistic called engagement. And it's got nothing to do with, I watched the video and I found it engaging. My opinion is that's an engaging video. It's a measurement of the number of people who comment versus the number of people who view a video. And this is not Jason's opinion. This is not how cool is Kevin Shipp or the CIA. Whether you're talking about a video about cute kittens, Kevin Shipp, Out of Shadows, Jason Goodman, Star Wars, Taylor Swift, how to bake a cake, how to modify your Tesla, whatever, across all of YouTube, this engagement analytic is 0.5%, meaning for every 1,000 people who view a video of any kind on YouTube, on average, 5 per 1,000 will comment. So you can tell a lot about your content and your YouTube channel based on how it deviates from that average. Now, videos featuring Kevin Shipp on Crowdsource the Truth, which currently has over 100,000 subscribers, are typically 3 to 4 times average engagement, meaning lots of people are interested who are watching and they want to interact with that content. They want to comment. They want to tell, you know, other viewers and Kevin and myself and whoever's involved in the video what they're feeling, whatever. So we're about 3 to 4 times average engagement. This trailer that I was observing was 1/10 average engagement, and this is a metric that advertisers use to determine if your viewership is authentic. They don't want to advertise to a bunch of purchased views. Now, why would someone purchase views on a YouTube video?
How did you access that level of
granularity?
Yes.
You just look at the YouTube video, and it says, well, this was released on April 6th. And by April 9th, it has 100,000 views and 90 comments. So it's like, well, wait a minute. At 100,000 views, it should have more like 900 comments. So that would be just average. And given how popular Kevin Shipp is and how interested people are in things he has to say, it should have more like 2,000 comments. I mean, Jeff, if you produced a documentary movie, let's say you and I worked on a documentary for 2 years about an important subject, and you said to me, you know, Jason, I have a marketing idea for our documentary. We want as many people to see it as possible. We spent our own money making this thing $10,000, $20,000, $50, whatever it cost. We want people to see it. My idea, Jason, I spoke to somebody in Hollywood who markets movies and videos of all kinds. Why don't we make 4 or 5 days a week before the movie comes out, we'll make 4 trailers, 30 seconds, a minute, whatever. And what we're going to do is we're going to go to one of these click farm websites where I can buy 30,000 subscribers or buy 100,000 subscribers for, I don't know, $100, $1,000, whatever it is. This is your advertising budget. And the strategy is we're going to drive fake views, purchased views, to these trailers so that they are forced into the YouTube recommendation engine. Now, everyone who is interested in this type of content will get our trailer recommended to them by YouTube because we've figured out a way to kind of gamify the YouTube search engine. And I'll tell you what, it's not even necessarily dishonest. This could be a legitimate marketing strategy for something. It might even be commonly used by Star Wars, Taylor Swift, whoever. But you see, when I, in private, in a text message or a phone call, ask a close colleague, why are the statistics related to this video so out of kilter? For them to say, well, I don't know, and avoid talking to me about it for 9 days seems odd. If that colleague got on the phone and said, look, I don't really want to publicize this, but here is our marketing strategy. We did X, Y, and Z. I'd say, okay, I understand. That's legitimate. I might not choose to do that, but I get it. Or if he said, hey, you know what? You raise a good point. That is really strange. I don't have any idea how they marketed that. I'm not involved at that end of it, but I've made a commitment to advertise it on channels other than yours, despite the fact that you've helped me earn thousands of dollars by monetizing my social media platform. I'm going to go give this interesting piece of content to some other website that hasn't done that for me. These are strange things that colleagues who are trying to work together to help each other don't do. And when we're talking about an ex-CIA officer, why is that person a beyond questioning? Isn't it possible that 10 years ago, 20 years ago, who knows when, whenever Kevin Shipp's story began, isn't it possible that the CIA decided, you know what, social media is a growing threat to our ability to control the message in the media. We need an agent who we can sheep dip. Sheep dipping is when you take a wolf, like a military person or a CIA person, and you dip them in sheep's clothing by creating a plausible background story that sometimes requires years to create.
Like a whistleblower.
Like a whistleblower story. Like Lee Harvey Oswald, he's not a CIA asset. He's a communist sympathizer handing out Cuba flyers. Kevin Shipp is not an active CIA operative. He's a whistleblower who 9 years ago found an exploit in a State Department database that anyone could walk into an embassy, a foreign embassy, U.S. embassy, exploit this, you know, loophole in the database and gain access to the identities of clandestine operatives. Well, when I look back on that in light of what's happened with Kevin Shipp now, I find that implausible. Kevin Shipp can barely operate Skype. How is he finding exploits in databases? He's not a computer expert by any measure. I mean, he's better than many 60-year-old guys or however old he is, but he's not a computer specialist. He can do PowerPoint, he can do email and stuff like that, but I find it difficult to believe he's finding computer exploits. So what if the CIA created this story and went as far as saying, yeah, there's going to be a lawsuit, and we're going to go through the dance of Kevin Shipp suing us, getting sued, whatever the hell it is, generate all these public documents, give him the redacted stuff so he can write a book and put out this story and integrate himself into social media, gain people's trust, and then strike.
It's not far-fetched, especially what we're seeing here with an example with a potential social engineering situation with Nicole Sirotec. We're not saying it is, but we're suspicious.
It's got red flags on it. And why can't we reach this woman if she's so... I'll tell you another example of a doctor who came out in social media. Dr. Daniel Erickson gave a press conference where he and his colleagues said, hey, we've now been testing people in our clinic for X number of months. We have more than 5,000 results. This gives us, we feel, a large enough body of data that we can extrapolate out and make. I mean, I've never done a medical survey, so I don't know, but these guys are doctors. These guys have data and information. They came out. They got slammed. I reached out to that guy, got him right away. I've spoken to him on the phone two or three times. He's very busy trying to book him on my show. But that's someone who's claiming to want to get a message out, and he's accessible. You can find him. Why can't I find this woman, Nicole Sirotec?
It's very unusual. There's another nurse video titled Insane Murder Going On in NYC Hospitals.
Right.
RN discloses go viral.
Right. So this is the one where it's kind of a brunette who says she's not a nurse, but her friend is a nurse, and this is her account, and all this weird stuff. It's like, right away, I feel like I'm talking to a 15-year-old who's lying to me about something. It's like, why is this story so complicated right out of the gate? There's another person who, what is the purpose of what? She mentions in that video that Dr. Cameron Kyle Seidel has been trying to get the word out. His video has been deleted from YouTube. Now, that's not correct. His original video remains there. So this person is at least inaccurate, if not deliberately lying to us. And when I see that type of inaccuracy, that is a flat-out inaccuracy. It causes me to wonder how accurate is this person. Now, in trying to track her down, I was led to someone else who, it's not clear, is the same person.
Just, you were trying to find her to be a guest on your show.
Yes, okay. To ask more about this. I mean, if you're so compelled that you need to take to social media, why wouldn't you want to get the word out? The other thing I should add is, Google up that Nicole Sirotec video and look at the analytics on that. It's being reposted on channels with, you know, like 1,000 subscribers, you know, 900,000 views. And people will say, oh, well, because she's, you know, blowing the whistle and this and that. I mean, you know, you can make up whatever thought you want in your mind as to why that might happen. But when we use evidence to come.
I didn't even complete the full
Nicole
name.
Nicole S.I. and it knows.
And it knows right away.
How many Nicole S.I.s must there be on the internet? And it takes us right to this. So it's strong evidence that this thing is being pumped somehow. And by who and for what purpose, it's hard to know. But if there's something unusual happening about a video, and I ask, why is there this unusual activity around the video? And then swarms of anonymous Twitter accounts and YouTube user accounts. How many subscribers on this account here? So 1,590. That is a very small number of subscribers. I can tell you that when I release with consistency videos on Crowdsource the Truth 2, which has 17,000 viewers, they get about 1/10 the viewership of the same videos on the Jason Goodman YouTube channel, which has over 100,000 viewers. And it's very difficult to exceed the viewership of your subscribership.
I don't know if you can see that, Jason, but that's 920,603 views.
On this video, mm-hmm. on a channel with less than 2,000 subscribers. So, see, the number of subscribers, that plays into the number of people who are, you know, getting that video no matter what. So if it's only 1,500, 1,600 people getting it, the likelihood that it would go to 900,000 views, I mean, someone should go and look at other videos around YouTube that perform like that and see how often that happens and create a statistical model for how likely is it that this is organic versus someone pumping the views for whatever reason. Why would a nurse risk, first of all, losing her job? Second of all, she could be sued for every penny she's ever earned for accusing someone of murder when she doesn't know. These doctors are doing their best with an unknown disease, and I wasn't there. She would need some really, really, really strong evidence to accuse someone of murder and not be liable for defamation, per se. I know how I behave when I'm trying to get the word out. I know how other people in social media behave. Matthew Whitaker, the former acting attorney general, he's releasing a book, so he wants to get the word out. So he's going around, he's on different YouTube channels, he's trying to promote it. He doesn't produce one drive-by video and then disappear and you can't access him. I mean, he's a public figure, obviously, so it's perhaps a bad example, but it doesn't make sense to me. This guy, Cameron Kyle Seidel, he's another doctor who came out. He's in his kitchen. He's making videos with the Blue Yeti, you know, USB microphone. Maybe he's a little more technically sophisticated than your average doctor. He is younger. I think he's 37 or 39 or something like that.
What are your thoughts here, Jason, about the purpose or the reason why these videos are being pushed out? I was suspecting that could this be a propaganda effort because more people are realizing there's something wrong with the information that they're getting here. So much conflicting data. It seems that people are lying and deceiving through the corporate-owned channels that they're getting information from. In order to maintain a frequency of fear, these viral videos are posted.
Right.
And they're very suspect, as you're pointing out. And you could look at the forensics.
Yes.
In terms of investigating the authenticity of a video like this, and it just doesn't add up.
Correct. And I'm not just saying, oh, I don't like what this person said. She's cursing too much. It can't be real. That is a component of it. You got to think. I mean, yeah, maybe she would curse like that if she's frustrated. Maybe she would refer to a patient as a black guy and do that on video. I don't know. That seems like an ignorant person who would say that. Particularly someone who's in the healthcare field, who's dealing with the general public, who's dealing with people of all races. This is not some old person who is like Archie Bunker talking about colored people. It's like this is a 30-something-year-old nurse who should have the wherewithal to recognize that referring to someone as my black guy is just... That doesn't seem appropriate to me. Cursing like that doesn't seem like a good way to spread your message to a broad audience, even if it's what you're prone to doing in your personal life. I think people are aware that when you're in a professional setting, you sometimes speak and act in a way that is appropriate for that setting, which may be different than the way that you speak and act around your friends in a relaxed mode. And I don't think that that cursing and foul language helps get her message across. It, in my view, it makes her seem less responsible.
It seemed to me to be a little bit of a contrived colloquialism.
I agree.
It's interesting because another potential aspect of social engineering is an article in the New York Times last week that caught my eye. It was titled, "With New Hotspots Emerging, No Sign of a Respite." And the subtitle is, "While cities like New York have seen hopeful drop in cases, upticks in other major cities and smaller communities have offset those decreases." And it's written by Amy Harmon, Julie Bosman, and Mitch Smith. And one sentence of this article just bothered me.
Let's hear it.
"The country is still in the firm grip of a pandemic with little hope of release. For every indication of improvement in controlling the virus, new outbreaks have emerged elsewhere, leaving the nation stuck in a steady, unrelenting march of deaths and infections." And I thought to myself, what is a march of deaths? And then how would a reporter have access to so much information about the future to then inform the wide readership of the New York Times, quote, "with little hope of release"? Virus or no virus, this seems like psychological warfare to me. What are your thoughts, Jason?
Absolutely. I mean, I think there is good information and evidence to... I'm not one of these people who says there is no virus, this is a hoax. I think there is a pathogen. I think it's a necessary component. I think they do need to demonstrate a certain amount of death. One of the regular guests on Crowdsource the Truth is a guy named John Cullen. John Cullen, he's told everybody on air he used to work for Oracle, so he's very into data and databases. And, you know, just like I do stuff with cameras, this guy does stuff with databases. He's just got a knack for it. And he's been looking at influenza deaths over the past, say, 5 years compared to 2019-2020 season, talking about how the reporting of influenza deaths has completely stopped. By their own admission, Dr. Birx has said they've stopped reporting influenza deaths. We've heard Dr. Scott Jensen, who's a state senator in Minnesota, say that the Minnesota Department of Health has issued new guidelines for pronouncing death that are very different than what he's used to, that seem to promote adding COVID-19 as the cause of death. So there are a number of things that would cause me to believe that in addition to biological warfare, there is a huge psychological warfare component. And I agree with you. How would the New York Times know? We need to look at the people who have been chanting this mantra of there's going to be a second wave. And I'm talking about Anthony Fauci. I'm talking about Bill Gates. And I'm talking about several of the social engineers who have appeared in social media. Now, going back to the CIA and my former friend Kevin Shipp, well, he was never my friend, my former associate Kevin Shipp, he's told us, and it's openly reported and admitted, in the 1970s, we had the Church Committee hearings where the CIA declassified and admitted to a program called Operation Mockingbird, whereby they embedded journalists and paid journalists to control the message to the public so that the CIA could control the message. This is a direct violation of the CIA's mandate. They're not allowed to operate within the United States, but obviously they do. And it is my firm feeling, certainly in 2016, it was obvious to me, so it's very likely it was obvious to the CIA prior, that social media and YouTube specifically were taking over for television. I think, I don't know, I haven't seen the statistics, but it's possible more people watch motion picture content on YouTube than on television. I don't know.
Certainly as a medium to commandeer.
They want influence over
a wide influence and,
right,
and psychological impact.
Yes, they don't want, and it even says this in the movie Out of Shadows. The key subject of the documentary is a stuntman named Mike Smith, who says that, you know, they don't want people to have this huge influence and not have control over that influence. He's telling you in the movie what they're trying to do to you. Why is this movie allowed to get 10 million views in a couple days, but not be controlled by this hidden force that they're talking about in the movie? I mean, they're telling it to you right there. You just got to open your eyes and open your ears.
Very consistent with anyone who becomes influential in society. They show you that they try to blackmail that person or coerce a person who is very influential, such as an actor or a musician that reaches a certain level.
Right.
Try to get them in compromising situations,
right,
on video, and then use that to control them later on. If it works, great. If it doesn't, then I guess things get worse.
Well, right. You get somebody in that environment involved in illegal drugs. You get them involved with an underage person, whether it's, you know, heterosexual or homosexual or whatever. You get them involved in something, anything, that can be used against them, and they use that leverage. So it's totally not only reasonable, but we almost have to presume they will not allow someone to, they look at someone like Alex Jones, who I think we spoke about last time. If not, I've spoken about him plenty of times. Not promoting Alex Jones, not advocating Alex Jones, just observing, and I'm not a detractor either, I'm just observing. This is a guy who, as I understand it, started out on a public access radio station for no money and was able to gain enough influence that he had millions and millions of viewers and was challenging the narrative in the mainstream. They don't want that. They only want people who are under that influence. And does that mean that they do it by sponsoring your podcast with a VPN or storable food or whatever it is? I don't know. But, you know, if you do a podcast with a VPN as a sponsor and it gets 2 million views and you get thousands of dollars from the sponsor, it's a natural feeling to say, whoa, let me do another show on that topic with that sponsor and get more money. That's what people want to do. And that's why I have created this business model where I'm not selling anything on my show other than the show itself. So people sponsor the show on Patreon and Subscribestar, and, you know, they pay $2 a month is the minimum. Some people pay as much as $25 or $100 a month, which is extremely generous. But the idea is the viewers are the sponsors. There's no one sponsor who's giving me $100,000 or $1 million or $1 billion, to the extent that if someone came on and said, you know, I've discovered there's poison in that vaccine or that storable food or that VPN is stealing all your data and I want to do a story on it. Do you think the sponsor of the show would want a story about how their product is bad for the public? Certainly not.
It is the bane of how information is disseminated in our society. It's the system and the structure is really, it's got problems, and that's the primary reason.
But it's also the primary reason, I think, that social engineers are attacking me, because I looked at the, when I started doing this, it was clear to me that, you know, there were people who were already saying, oh, my YouTube channel got demonetized because I spoke about this or that. So I said, well, why am I going to swim against that tide and talk about stuff that I know they're going to demonetize? I'm not going to rely on monetizing on YouTube, because that itself is a method of control. YouTube doesn't like your video about Dr. Judy Mikovits, bam, demonetized, channel deleted, whatever. So I don't want that. By relying on these independent viewer sponsors, it has created this scalable, sort of decentralized sponsorship that I think is a threat.
Excellent. Good job, Jason. I'm thrilled to hear that kind of thing. And it's a similar model for community radio stations,
right?
That are
viewer, listener, mm-hmm. sponsored, right?
I want to just mention a couple points here, and that is to remember that according to Dr. Tom Cowan, a proper test hasn't been established showing COVID-19 virus being contagious. An impure sample, he says, of COVID-19, which included other virus and bacteria, was injected into field mice.
Ooh.
And that didn't get them sick.
Mm-hmm.
When it was injected into genetically modified mice, those mice got sick.
Wow.
So that's one other
thing. How are the mice genetically modified? I mean, see, that's the thing. We're getting into science that I certainly don't understand and can't evaluate, but it's interesting that we're talking about, you know, injecting viruses into people. The flu vaccine contains tons of coronaviruses. And I mean, again, it's hard.
That's right. And a doctor has come out and said, if you have a flu vaccine, then you have the COVID-19.
You'll test positive.
Yep,
right.
Exactly.
So there's a lot of viruses that are in our bodies all the time. Did we talk about this last time? Did you ever have chicken pox?
I think so, yeah.
As a kid, probably. Mm-hmm. Almost everybody has had it. If you've had chicken pox, if you've had shingles, if you've had a cold sore from biting your tongue or your lip, you've got zoster virus. Zoster virus is, you know, common name, I think, is herpes. And if you were to be tested for zoster virus and you've had chicken pox or any of that stuff, they could come out with a report that says, oh my God, everybody should be shocked. 40% of the population has zoster virus. So if they decided next year, the novel 2021 zoster virus is now deadly, and start testing everybody for zoster virus, well, okay, you've got the virus. But what about the number of people that have the virus and actually become sick from it versus the number of people that have? I mean, this is the nature, the very definition of being a hypochondriac. If you went to the doctor right now and tested yourself for every single possible thing, they probably could find something that would alarm you and maybe even say, oh, well, you need this treatment, you need this surgery, you need this whatever. But people don't do that unless you have acute symptoms of something that is hindering your comfort, your, you know, ability to function. And this is what our immune systems are for. It's not about getting inoculated against every possible thing that could make you sick.
And doctors are speaking out against quarantining healthy people. And another thing I wanted to mention is when people are allowed to go into a park or public area, a day later or so, you'll hear reports of COVID-19 deaths increasing or the number of people who get sick increase. People are allowed to be in public spaces and they're then the cause of those numbers.
Right.
And I thought, okay, isn't there an incubation period?
Right.
Why are they allowing that false information to come out like that? Do you know what I'm talking about? Have you seen those reports?
I haven't necessarily seen specifically that, but it speaks to a larger point. So if you went to the doctor, I had an infection on my finger a couple months ago, went to the doctor, they stuck a pin in it, drained it out, and gave me one pill, and it was fine. Let's say I went to the doctor with an infection on my finger, and the doctor said, oh, we got to amputate your finger, because that could become sepsis, and you could die. Let's just cut off the tip of your finger right now. Would you do that, Jeff?
I wouldn't, no.
You'd go see another doctor and say, you know, somebody told me I need to amputate this finger. Do you think there's anything at all that could be done to save the finger? And probably, depending on how bad the infection was, another doctor would say, well, that wasn't entirely wrong because it could do this or that. But before we take that extreme step, why don't we try some intravenous antibiotics? Why don't we drain it? There's a surgery we could do that might save your finger. I'd want a second opinion, a third opinion, and maybe even a fourth opinion before I take the drastic, irreversible step of amputating my finger. So I think we should have gotten a pool of doctors together and make sure they're not all funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, who, by the way, is funding the pharmaceutical companies that are working on the vaccine. Why is Bill Gates suddenly the biggest medical expert in the world? Vogue had an article asking, why is Bill Gates not leading the coronavirus task force? I mean, the answers to that question are numerous. He's not a doctor. He's never graduated college. He's not a biologist. The vaccines he's disseminated in Africa and India and other areas around the world have done more damage than good, according to the doctors and public health officials in those regions. So why the hell are we even talking to or listening to Bill Gates at all? He's a proven monopolist who, at best, is somewhere on the spectrum of autism, and I personally think is not someone who should be listened to about anything. The Windows operating system, even on version 10, is an absolute failure, in my opinion. This is a guy who sees opportunities and seizes them and is a ruthless monopolist who wants to control the operating system of a device that has become pervasive in society. So he's essentially controlling data, and data kind of controls our lives, where you go, what you do, what you purchase, your health, etc. It's clear that he wants to monopolize that. And when you look at all of the tentacles that his foundations have into every other, and they have
climate engineering,
funding foundations. It's a convoluted thing that matches the pattern of these social engineers. They don't come out under their real name and say, oh, hey, this is the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. They have Johns Hopkins University, and they have, you know, the World Economic Forum and all these things that come out of that, where they're, you know, the Children's Foundation Fund is funded by this thing, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation gives money to the Clinton Foundation, and the Clinton Foundation gives and receives money to pharmaceutical companies all over the place to deliver pharmaceuticals. And it's this convoluted series of things that, you know, even if you were going to go after it in a legal manner, unwinding it all is so complicated to do. It's caused me to really doubt this whole Occam's razor thing.
Definitely, you should doubt Occam's razor, which is the simplest answer is usually the right answer.
But let's elaborate on that, because another one of my regular guests, David Hawkins, who I have David Hawkins Discovery CSI on Crowdsource the Truth on Fridays, he gives a more detailed and verbose explanation. It's the simplest answer that fits all the facts is very likely the solution. Now, that's different than the simplest answer must be the solution, which is what every armchair kind of analyst who thinks they're a genius and thinks you're a conspiracy theorist, Occam's razor, that just shuts down any quote-unquote conspiracy theory. Well, what if Bill Gates and Melinda Gates had dinner with Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton and said, you know, you have a foundation, you used to be the president, I'm a scumbag, weirdo software executive that most people have an unfavorable opinion of. Why don't you be the front man for some crazy operation where we'll send millions and millions of tax-free dollars to a pharmaceutical company that I have a separate thing invested in that will, you know, cause everybody to think that AIDS and HIV are a huge problem in this country in Africa, where actually a bigger problem is they don't have clean water, they don't have electricity, they don't have access to hospitals, they don't have roads. Many, many more people are dying of common illnesses that we have existing inexpensive treatments or cures for. But instead, let's just sell them a bunch of faulty drugs from a fraudulent pharmaceutical company called Ramboxi, and I'm sure there's others.
Inovio is
the one that Bill Gates is funding in Philadelphia to work on a vaccine. We've been hearing Fauci, they're talking about, and even Trump. I'm so disappointed in Trump, who I voted for and still support, and hope that he will have some magical plan that it will be revealed to us at some point, but he's got to act. But even Trump is on board with promoting this vaccine. Now, you asked, why is this happening? Who is doing this, et cetera? You
know, it was more along the lines of the fear-mongering. And,
well, why are they fear-mongering?
Well, another example is Project Veritas. I don't know what you think of them, but they seem to be on the cutting edge of catching people red-handed.
Yeah.
And they had some interesting videos. Recently, they released an insider video documenting a staged COVID-19 testing area involving Cherry Hill
right.
Health and a CBS local station in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And it aired on CBS this morning. So they exposed that. They also exposed another situation a few weeks ago showing them going into a New York City hospital to get tested for COVID-19,
right.
not showing symptoms, but had traveled to California and back recently. The doctor told them that they weren't qualified for testing, and another nurse said people are dying. They come in, they're obese, diabetic, basically underlying conditions.
Right.
Then another video they released repeats what you've researched, Jason, in terms of potential inflation of the COVID-19, the death numbers as observed by funeral directors.
At the DeRisso. Yeah, I saw that they were talking to that guy that I met outside the DeRisso.
And one director said a motivation for that is federal funding to New York City.
Right.
And he said it's easier for hospital workers to write COVID-19 on every death. So there's fear-mongering in here, right, for the testing and the fake testing centers and to show more people involved.
Right.
So I was asking, why do you think that's going on in addition?
Mm. Well, you know, first of all, I have a positive opinion of Project Veritas. I've met James O'Keefe. He's friendly and seems like he's doing the right thing. You know, I don't know that much about them. I have nothing bad to say about them. And I think they're doing important work. Why is this fear-mongering happening? Well, I think you raise a very good point. Federal funding to the state. I mean, certainly Andrew Cuomo is flexing his political muscles and they are exerting a lot of control. I think life has so fundamentally changed in New York City and, I mean, pretty much the rest of the United States and the rest of the world, as far as I know. You can no longer enter any retail store in New York City without wearing one of these medical masks, which now Newt Witowski, who was the head or something of the Rockefeller Medical School, he's no longer affiliated with them. He's among several doctors who have said, this is absolutely crazy. You are increasing the amount of carbon dioxide that you are, you know, the purpose of exhaling is, I mean, this is a little bit like drinking your own urine. You're not supposed to be rebreathing what you exhale.
And, it's acidic, too.
Right. So there are doctors who are making scientifically backed arguments that this is the opposite of what we should be doing. And those doctors are being attacked, suppressed. Daniel Erickson said the same thing, keeping everybody inside. I mean, and this is pretty easy for a layperson to understand. If you've ever broken your arm or your leg or you've had any kind of illness that's caused you to lay in bed, even for a week or two. You know, I had knee surgery. My leg was in a cast, couldn't move it. And then you're very weak. It's not easy to walk. You need to exercise to rehabilitate. And for months, you don't have the kind of strength in that limb. I had a cast on my arm one time that did the same thing. Everybody knows that. So if you stay inside and you stay isolated and you don't ride the subway and you don't go to the supermarket, you don't touch the handle of a taxi and you don't breathe the air from outside and occasionally get sneezed on by another person, obviously I'm not encouraging people to do that, but I'm just saying these are the typical exposures that we get to bacteria, to viruses. This is what the body is designed to do. It's like when an astronaut goes to the space station and then they have these deteriorations of their muscles and their bones because the human body has evolved, or if people don't believe in evolution, we're here on Earth with gravity. And that affects our bodies. And when you take that away, that has an effect as well. So we haven't been hearing from alleged experts like Dr. Fauci, who's incredibly conflicted in terms of being an inventor on patents that are related to antagonists to glycoprotein 120 and HIV that's been identified by independent scientists in this COVID-19. There has not been a transparent peer review process where non-conflicted doctors are able to weigh in. The attacks against this Dr. Daniel Erickson have alleged that he's financially motivated because he owns a clinic in Bakersfield, and by saying this, somehow he's going to make more money through his clinic. Well, first of all, I don't think anybody who isn't in Bakersfield or someplace pretty close is going to go to see this doctor. Maybe somebody will, but it's not like millions of people are going to start going to this dude's drive-up clinic or whatever it is that he's running. And frankly, being a doctor running a drive-up clinic, why is that bad? I see walk-in clinics all over the place in New York City. And for a lot of people, it's a great first step where you're sick. You go to this guy and they say, well, you need to go to the hospital or you need this pill or whatever. So why is his opinion immediately attacked as being financially motivated, but no one's asking Anthony Fauci about his financial motivation? No one's asking Bill Gates about his financial motivation. No one's asking Bill Clinton about his financial motivation to flood African nations and Haiti and other places with medical treatments, with pharmaceuticals. And on Haiti for a moment, this Dr. Cameron Kyle Seidel, well, he was part of, I believe, Partners in Health, which was in Haiti. He was training doctors in Haiti. His Twitter account has a link to some Haitian hospital. I would challenge any of your listeners, not challenge, I would encourage them, if they ever meet a Haitian person, ask them what went on with the Clinton Foundation in Haiti. I have never spoken with a Haitian person who is unaware of the crimes the Clintons have done in Haiti and the wrongs they have done. So it's strange to me that this guy, Cameron Kyle Seidel, was there in Haiti working with this Partners in Health group. And when I question him about, and he knows Colleen Smith, she was his resident. That's a very close relationship. These doctors are out there in social media when most doctors that I speak to don't want to do that, particularly doctors who work for hospitals, which those guys do. Now, Daniel Erickson, he's an interesting exception to what I'm saying because he doesn't work for a hospital. He owns his own clinic. So he is essentially a private businessman who's also a doctor who can speak for his own organization because he's the head of it. He's not the doctor in charge of epidemiology at whatever, Mount Sinai Hospital. Because if he were, he would recognize that his salary is paid by that organization. And if he came out in public and said something that was not approved by that organization, he'd be in danger of losing his job. If he accused that organization of a crime without evidence and being prepared to take that accusation to the proper authorities, he would be fired and potentially legally liable. So my question becomes, if these doctors, these nurses, these medical professionals are willing to risk their jobs, their medical licenses, their financial freedom, and do things that would potentially tie them up and prevent them from helping patients for years to come or maybe ever doing that again, why are there these inconsistencies in what they say and do? It doesn't make sense to me.
The point here is that you think people such as Dr. Erickson are authentic.
Yes, I do.
Okay. You recently had, speaking of authentic doctors and scientists, you recently had Judy Mikovits,
yes,
on, author of Plague of Corruption, on your show with Charles Ortel discussing Plandemic, a popular interview. I haven't seen it yet, but I hear that YouTube removed it, but it's online still, of course, somewhere.
Yeah. Well, I don't like to use that word plandemic. I mean, even if we do feel that there was foreknowledge or planning and there's certain aspects of this COVID-19 pandemic that are inauthentic, I find that plandemic to be, it's something that if you were to say that to a person who is not of this type of thinking, I think immediately causes them to roll their eyes.
Totally,
to
yeah.
To characterize you as a social, as a conspiracy theorist. And so I think that that is a term.
That term could have been created by the social engineers.
Correct.
Okay.
And that video that you're talking about, let's talk about that video for a second. Mm-hmm. I, other than Judy Mikovits, who I only know from phone calls and video chat, I've never met her.
What have you learned about her work in the context of the pandemic and what we're talking about now, of the fear-mongering and the social engineering?
Well, I think that Judy Mikovits presents a very credible story. And, you know, there are people who have come out and said she's discredited. I mean, this is, how is she discredited? Because Fauci said she's discredited, because there was a lawsuit against her, she's discredited. They call her a conspiracy theorist. They call her all kinds of things. But in my view, she's presented very credible evidence. She's a very credible scientist.
She reminds me of Dr. Judy Baker, Judy Vary Baker,
yes.
Yeah, she's been on the show, and we talked about her relationship with Lee Harvey Oswald and her development of the of cancer using viruses.
Well, exactly. Judith Vary Baker is not a doctor. She was a researcher, but at a very young age, she was hired by Alton Ochsner to work in his clinic in the 1960s doing cancer research. And Judith Baker understood when she was in her 20s that they were trying to cure cancer. But over the years that she worked there, she came to realize that they were weaponizing cancer. And she alleges that Lee Harvey Oswald's actual purpose was to travel to Cuba with this weaponized cancer-causing virus and to transfer that to a member of Castro's medical staff who was working with the CIA, who was intended to inject Castro with this material that would cause cancer and cause him to die. And the idea was to assassinate Castro in a way that couldn't be traced back, would appear to be a natural death from cancer. So this notion of biological warfare, this notion of hiding the steps and the traces and everything, it's been around for a long, long time. And as you rightly point out, Dr. Judy Mikovits also tells us that she discovered dangerous viruses in the substrates being used to cultivate these vaccines. So let's take a step back. When someone wants to make a vaccine, they are essentially taking a virus, let's say it's coronavirus. And by the way, there's a lot of researchers who say there is no guarantee that there will be an effective, as a matter of fact, they doubt there will be an effective vaccine.
It's going to be a different vaccine, I understand. It's going to be the messenger RNA vaccine, which affects your DNA chains, connect into your DNA chain.
Do you want Bill Gates experimenting with your DNA? This is 18 months. They don't know what this is going to do. This is literally one of the, if not the largest medical experiment ever proposed, and people are basically chomping at the bit for it. But when they want to create the traditional method, as I understand it, for vaccine discovery is they identify a virus. Let's call it polio. Okay. They first need to study the virus in a lab. And the general idea is they want to attenuate the virus. They want to weaken it in some way, introduce it into the body to familiarize your immune system to it, but have it be sufficiently crippled that it doesn't make you sick, but allow your body to create antibodies to fight it, to help the immune system along. Now, sounds good, but this is medicine and unknown areas of science, and unknown outcomes can occur. I've heard doctors giving speeches where they say sometimes in vaccines, there's this paradoxical response where this attenuated virus is introduced into the body and the patient becomes more susceptible to that virus.
Absolutely. Yeah.
A lot of people have experienced that with the flu vaccine. You get sick after you get it.
Definitely.
So, I mean, you know, what Dr. Mikovits tells us is that the substrate, the living tissue that the viruses they were trying to cure were cultivated on, that living tissue, in her case, it was mouse brains. In Dr. Judith Baker's case, I believe it was simian pancreas cells. Those source cells had their own viruses in them. So in the case of Judith Baker, she identified SV40, simian virus 40, which when introduced into humans was causing cancer. Dr. Judy Mikovits talks about cancer-causing viruses in the mouse brain cells that were used to cultivate HIV. She also clarified something about the HIV glycoprotein, the spike proteins that the Indian study found had uncanny similarities to the glycoprotein in HIV-1. So the question now becomes, were cultivating cells that had HIV used to grow these coronaviruses to try to test a vaccine? And is the cure not, in fact, more deadly than the disease?
You know, as a media person, you probably get tricked by some of these people.
Oh,
I know I have.
All the time.
Yep.
You've just raised a very important point. I have been tricked by a lot of these social engineers. George Webb, was my associate at one time, and there's a long list of social engineers that fooled me. George Webb used to tell me, oh, don't pay any attention to Robert David Steele. Don't pay any attention to this guy or that guy. Ignore the trolls. Ignore the trolls. The problem with that is what a sensible person would do when you're in grade school and there's a bully, maybe the teacher or your mom or whatever says, oh, just ignore them and they'll go away. Yeah, that might be true in the real world, in your real life. But when there is this focused, concerted effort that could be funded by someone, I don't know who, but they're out there. I don't understand how, you know, adult people in their 50s, their 60s, their 30s, whatever age, who should have kids and jobs and things to worry about and things to do. You know, everybody gets into arguments with somebody on Facebook, on Twitter, a couple of mean messages, angry things are sent back and forth. Usually your energy for that wears out after about two or three or five messages, certainly after a day or two, even if you get so pissed off, you just get over it because you don't have time to be fighting and arguing with all these people. How do we explain these people that have been after me every day for 3 years? How do we explain that?
I didn't know that you're going through that.
Oh, yeah. Jason. George Webb's brother every day is producing videos, tweets, his own blog, posting false stories, making up stories, accusing me of terrorist attacks. George Webb has publicly accused me of rape with no evidence, totally false story. So, you know, when we have these social engineers in the social media sphere, they're trying to influence people's thoughts. They're trying to influence what people believe is true because they want you to believe something false is true so that they can influence your decision making. And I have started to gain a reputation for exposing these people. Should we be questioning the ex-CIA agent who's involved in a movie that releases no new evidence, that implicates no new suspects, and could in itself be a limited hangout causing a new audience to trust Kevin Shipp, Mike Smith, and Liz Crokin?
Yes, and we've seen this again and again, these entities to try and control a narrative.
Right.
And if they don't have control of that narrative, they get very nervous.
Yeah.
And their systems start to break down and they become exposed. And more people are starting to become aware. And that gets back to the essence of what we're talking about here in the show. These types of videos released by the nurses, we're not sure exactly what's going on in terms of authenticity, but we are doubting some things about it and urging the listeners and viewers to look a little further into this and don't trust it on face value and don't get emotionally pulled into it. Jason, your site is Crowdsource the Truth. Tell listeners again how they can watch your interviews.
The best way to watch them is for people to become viewer sponsors. For as little as $2 a month, you go to subscribestar.com/crowdsourcethetruth or patreon.com/crowdsourcethetruth, and they're going to be able to watch all of the videos I put out on YouTube for free, as well as a really large library of sponsor-exclusive content that grows every week. It helps keep this kind of independent report alive. I've enabled viewers to buy back for very, very low dollar amount their ability to choose what they hear. And I've also mitigated the ability for social engineers to inject fake accounts.
Thank you again, Jason. I appreciate this.
Thank you, Jeff.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.